Well, this hour, we'll talk about the movies, sea creatures, monsters with Steve Alton and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Gosh, Stephen, I wonder what other monsters could be deep in the sea beyond just megalodons.
You never know what's out there. That's the thing. And they're discovering things all the time.
I'm still convinced that a plesiosaur still exists out there somewhere, too. I think that there are some dinosaur-type sea creatures. I think pterodactyl birds could be around.
Well, in Night Stalkers, I bring together three of the all-time sea monsters in Megalodon, Leoplerodon, and Leviathan Melvi, which was a prehistoric sperm whale that lived during the Miocene period with Megalodon, and I'm sure they had some epic battles.
Now, you turn your creatures into monsters, though, don't you?
Well,
you kind of get it. They become part of the book. They become characters, but they're mean creatures, aren't they?
They're definitely characters. I mean, in Night Stalkers, there's two Megalodon siblings that are called the sisters, and they're pretty nasty, but they have unique personalities at the same time.
Do you think if we ever get to Mars that we might find creatures there too somewhere?
I don't think so. I think Mars is a dead world at this point. I think there was creatures there at one point, but and oceans and life, but Mars is a lesson for us, because that's a planet that had what we have now and lost it because of things like climate change,
sure,
calderas and other natural disasters. And now it's a dead world, and we could end up pushing ourselves right off the cliff as well if we're not careful.
Yeah, we could be looking at us when we look at what has happened to Mars.
Yeah, and at the same time, Mars may have seeded life on Earth.
That's true. That's that possibility. But do you believe there is indeed extraterrestrial life out there? Of course, Stephen Greer does, but what about you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, before I, what happened to my wife and I a few Decembers ago, I believed it from a theory standpoint and just from a mathematical standpoint that there's so many planets and so many stars out there and so many galaxies that, it really, the odds would be against there not being life out there. But then having seen these UFOs for myself, I'm 100% convinced.
Okay, let's go to the phones. They're lining up here for you, Stephen. The hour will go by quickly. Let's go to Indianapolis, Indiana. Brian's with us, east of the Rockies. Brian, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Good afternoon.
Hi, Brian.
I appreciate the show, man. You do a good job. And hey, listen,
thank you.
Politics out of it, like we talked about last week on the open line.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, a couple of years ago, I was watching the National Geographic show. There was two scientists that were in a deep sea submersible sub, and it was deep, dark. They caught on film on their canopy a handprint of a white creature, the handprint looked like the hand of the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, one of those webbed hands, right?
Yes. Does your guest know anything about that piece of film and everything? And does he believe that mermaids exist?
All right, two good questions.
My answer's off the air, man, and I appreciate your guys' time.
Thanks, Brian. What about that? Have you heard anything about other kinds of creatures like that?
I can't say I have. I didn't see the show that the caller was referring to, so I can't really comment on it. But
webbed hands.
I think they used to confuse manatees with possibly mermaids, although that'd be a pretty fat mermaid.
Yeah, Discovery did a documentary on mermaids, and it was pretty well done. It convinced you that mermaids were around and real, but I wasn't so sure about the authenticity of the documentary.
Well, Discovery also did a mockumentary on Megalodon a couple years ago during Shark Week and got a lot of people all riled up because except for the very fast showing small print in the last frame of the movie, they didn't admit that it was a mockumentary.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon. You remember that when you were a kid?
Yeah.
It's possible, isn't it? It's possible that somewhere on this planet, there are creatures like that out there, you know, like Mothman. I mean, those things are unsolved.
You don't know what's out there. I don't know if it's a biped, but you never know what's out there.
No, you really don't. Pasquale in Santa Barbara, California, west of the Rockies. Hey there, Pasquale.
George, thanks for taking my call. You got a good screener tonight.
He's a good guy. He's our regular. That's Tommy.
Well, that's Tommy. Okay. Well, before I tell you why I called, I want to make a little request. Would you consider having the one of the people in that was in Vax? This really.
We're actually working on that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's a moving documentary.
Yep, it's about vaccines. So, go ahead.
I was telling Tommy, I actually saw Bessie. I said Tessie, but he said that. You don't even know her name, but, you know, I'm not kidding you. It was out of the water, and I'll give you a little background. I lived in Marin County at the time, and I still used to call Coast to Coast. One of my friends, his uncle, left him money, left him a tavern in Scotland, and he said, hey, I'll pay for your fare. Come on and spend a few days. So we got there. And I wanted to take a walk. I think it was on the first day around 3:30.
Mm-hmm.
I started walking. We were pretty close to the Loch Ness.
Wow.
And I'm walking, and thank God someone walking the other way. The sun was going down, so it was probably around 4:15, around 10:04, 4:15. The sun was going down, so it wasn't in the summer. But it wasn't that cold. And someone was walking the other way. I was right on the edge of the lake, and there's like this road. And he said, hey, you know, be careful. He said, people have disappeared, especially around dusk or dawn, so be careful. I said, okay, I'm not going to go too much farther. And this was, there were no trees around. I walked maybe 150 yards, and there was a grove of trees, and there was Bessie out of the water. I am not kidding.
Whoa.
You.
What did it look like, Pasquale? What did it look like?
Well, the main thing was the neck was big and long. It had flippers. And it looked like you could have catched the deer by moving its neck. The neck was very long, and the mouth was big enough probably to chomp on a medium-sized deer without too much trouble. And it looked like it could probably move its neck. The body was bulky, and it was flippers. And it did look at me, but I guess it figured I was too far away to cut. And it just crossed the road, but it was in a grove of trees. And I thought it was a female. I have no idea whether it really was a female or not. It had front and rear flippers. It was probably, I'd say, without exaggerating, between 8 and 12 feet high at the shoulder. And the neck was just about as long as the entire torso, not counting the tail. And it did have a tail.
So
it kind of walked like a seal.
But it didn't look like an eel, though.
No, that's why I'm so glad I got through. These are not eels. And I wanted to tell Steve, I'm very blessed because in Nova Scotia, I'm a Buddhist, and there's a Buddhist group up in Nova Scotia. I went to visit many, many years ago. I met this woman who I personally thought was kind of like a witch, a good witch. And she said, hey, let's take a walk. And we walked out, and she said, it's low tide. And she said, "And when it's high tide, we can't come out here. There were all these big boulders, and we're walking around. I felt this very eerie feeling, and I looked in the surf, and there was a little tiny one. It looked like an aborted birth, and I believe that they're also magical creatures. I really felt that they could turn themselves into other, they were like these big rocks. So maybe that was my imagination, but I didn't want to touch it because I thought maybe if it was just in like hibernation or something, and I didn't want to get my scent on it. So I got a little stick, picked it up, and put it back in water. But I held it in my hand. It looked exactly like the big one, but it was small, like about maybe 2 inches long. And I felt that we were being watched by the sea creatures.
Interesting. Okay, Pasquale, thanks for that story. Steven, that's pretty remarkable.
It's definitely remarkable.
Maybe another book, huh?
Could be.
Now, assuming that he saw what he saw, he's a great caller, so I don't think he's making up that story. What do you think?
Sounds like he saw something.
He saw something out there.
It's hard to tell from his description exactly what it was.
Little flippers and things like that, but could that have been a seal? Some kind of seal? Like you said, a manatee?
I, Well, I don't think there's manatees in Loch Ness, but it could have been something, some kind of creature like that, yeah.
When do we get one of these on video?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Google Earth is now checking out Loch Ness.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and Apple, and so we've got satellite technology engaged now, and they are coming up with some interesting shots of things.
Regardless of whether it's an eel or a plesiosaur or whatever, how many of them do you think are in the loch?
That's a good question. I mean, the loch is huge. I mean, it's 26 miles long.
There's more than one, though, right?
You would think there would be, but there's at least one big one.
Because they're breeding, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, these creatures have been around for how long? I mean, how long have people reported that they've seen a creature in the loch? When did that start?
The first sighting was back in the 1930s, and it was right around the time that they had built the road around Loch Ness and dynamited, and so
80 years, right?
Yeah, good 80 years.
80 years, which means these creatures probably don't have that kind of lifespan, I don't think.
Well, eels live a long time, so again...
80 years?
Well, the females are their sort of lifespan is attached to giving birth, so...
Of course, the Galapagos big tortoises, they live well over 100, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go to Jim in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to speak with you again.
You too, Jim.
I was just, your screener asked me to turn down the radio, so I kind of missed it, but I caught the last part. You saying that the thing that was on Shark Week was a mockumentary?
Yeah, they a couple years ago they did a 2-hour mockumentary on Megalodon still being out there and the Coast Guard seeing it and getting some images and a dead whale washing ashore with huge bite marks on it and they were basically hunting it and the only clue that you had it was a mockumentary was the final shot where they scrolled the credits and there was something really tiny that you would have to go back and pause it to read and that upset a lot of people.
And why do they call it a mockumentary? Because they're mocking things up too? They're making them up?
Basically, yeah, it's sort of a fictional documentary.
Okay. Next up, we have Lorianne in British Columbia, Canada on our international line. Hello, Lorianne.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi. Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm just wondering, have you heard of, in British Columbia, there's this area called the Okanagan, and apparently in Okanagan Lake, we have the Ogopogo.
Yes.
You've heard of that?
I sure have. Steve, you have too, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that also could be an eel because there's eels out there as well.
And that's much like, yeah, I was going to say the sightings are much like Nessie sightings, aren't they?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what do you hear out there, Lorianne? They still seeing this thing?
No, I think it's been quite a few years.
Yeah, it's been a while. I haven't heard any reports coming out of there.
And it's so populated there now, too.
Maybe it scares it off.
Yeah.
And, but we do get these, Stephen, all over the place. I remember when I was a kid, and I was down by a stream. This is in suburban Detroit. And it was a pretty good rushing water in the stream. I mean, not enough to knock me over if I was wading through it. But so I'm on the bank about 7 feet up looking down on the stream. And out of nowhere, this huge body of something pops up and goes back under again, and it's gone.
Wow.
And I'm thinking to myself, was that just a huge rock in the stream, like hit it and it created that look and then it kept going? And I kept looking and there was no rock there. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was. It could have been a huge turtle. Could have been, but I'm not sure. So there's so many strange things out there. Have you seen anything personally that you would consider weird?
I've As far as sea creatures, no. I've seen some weird things, but
yeah,
including some UFOs. But I can't say that I've seen anything weird in the sea yet.
Let's go to Virginia Beach, Virginia. John's with us. Welcome to the program, John. Thanks for calling.
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Good, John. Thank you.
Good, good. I just want to say I'm a proud owner of a whale vertebrae that I found on a river that I hunt at, about 30, 40 miles south of Richmond, Virginia, with a megalodon shark teeth embedded into the whale vertebrae.
Whoa. Get a picture of that to Mr. Alton. Would you like to see that, Stephen?
Oh, that'd be fabulous. Yeah, absolutely.
How big is the tooth, John?
The tooth is probably about 5 inches across at the top of it, maybe a little bit more. The whale vertebrae is about a foot, about 12 inches wide.
Does that make sense with the size of the tooth, Steve?
Yeah, they say there's an inch of tooth equals about 10 feet of shark, and you measure a tooth from the point to the longest tip.
Get a picture of that and send it to Steve. I assume they can email you through your website, Stephen?
Absolutely, yes.
I'd like to see that. Send us one, too, at george@coasttocoastam.com, and just put your permission that we can use it. I'd love to put that up on the website. That's good. And didn't you, Steve, I remember years ago we were talking, didn't a couple kids find a big tooth somewhere?
That was in Loch Ness, yeah. A couple students, they actually found a dead deer carcass, and they pulled a tooth out of the deer.
A big tooth, too, right?
Yeah, and the Loch Ness official who patrols the lake confiscated it, and they tried to get it back, and I think they ended up trying to sue, and they never got it back, but they did get photos of it, though.
So we never got it analyzed, I guess.
No.
Can they do DNA on a tooth?
That's a good question. You would think that they could, you know, if not the tooth itself, the root.
If the root, yeah, if they can get something like that out of it.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have found out what that might be. I mean, a 5 foot tooth, you're talking about a big jaw.
Well, it wasn't 5 feet. It was.
I mean, 5 inches.
5 inches, yeah.
5 inches.
But still, that's a big tooth.
Yeah, a 5 foot tooth. You're talking about a Tyrannosaurus Rex times 10. Indeed. Hey, Steve, stay with us, Steve. We got a final segment coming up. Thank you for sticking around, and we'll take the rest of your calls. Those of you on hold, just hang there. I shall get right with you with our guest, Steve Alton. All his books, of course, are linked up to his website, which you can find at coasttocoastam.com. And don't forget, in a couple years from now, you'll remember this interview because you'll see the movie on Meg right here at Coast to Coast AM. And that'll be fun to go watch. Stephen, maybe on opening night, if it's in L.A., give us a call. We'll go with you. I'd love to see that. More phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, lots coming up events-wise. This weekend I'll be in Contact in the Desert in Joshua Tree, California. Come on out and have a great time. I think we're also going to have a little birthday party for me. So full details there at coasttocoastam.com. And then on June 18th, I'm back in St. Louis, a live stage event at Lindenwood University. With some great guests, including UFO expert Stanton Friedman. He's coming all the way from Canada to be our special guest. So definitely come on out. Tickets available now. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com there. The little highlight reel, you can click that. And then in August, a couple months out, of course, but a live stage event there, too. And we're going to have a full band and lots of great times, including Joshua P. Warren, who will join me on stage. Again, information there at coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back. Steve Alton with us, of course. And Steve, I'm sure after the movie comes out, there are other peaks for you to climb. What's next for you? What's on your plate?
Well, the same producer who's the lead producer in Meg has also optioned two other books of mine, The Lock and Shark Man. So hopefully those will be the next out of the gate.
Well, that'd be great. Do you enjoy writing knowing that you might have a film there right behind it?
Well, my books tend to be very visual, so there's always the potential for a film.
Yes.
But it's such a long process at times, and difficult at times, that you sort of have to do it and trust the people that are working on it to do their job, and hopefully it works out.
Where are they going to film, Meg?
They're going to film it in China and New Zealand.
Aha, okay. And they're going to pretend they're in the Mariana Trench?
Yeah, I mean, they've got some amazing special effects houses. And that's one of the good things about the movie not being made back in 98, that special effects...
Oh, the computer effects now are amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. And from what I understand, that the set designs that they set up are just mind-boggling.
Does anybody get eaten in the series?
Oh, there'll be plenty of human delicacies, I'm sure.
Oh, boy. It's not quite like Jaws. It'll be different, won't it?
Well, you know, Jaws was a terrific movie, but the special effects don't hold up.
No. They had that old mechanical shark and everything.
Yeah, but, you know.
Too bad Richard Shaw's not alive anymore to be in that.
Yeah, or Roy Scheider.
Both of them are gone. But you have Dreyfuss. He's still around.
He's still around.
Let's go to the phones. We'll wrap things up. Let's go to Anthony in Mojave, California. Hi, Anthony. Thank you for calling.
Hi, George. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a great book, and it's a great subject.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I used to do a little work with a neighbor who was an amateur paleontologist. He used to go up to a place here in California called Oildale, Shark's Tooth Hill, and he'd collect megalodon teeth. He had an enormous collection of them. And teeth in sharks seem to be the identification point. Mako is different. Tiger has a double scallop, the you know, triangle of the white. And it seems to me that megalodons never left. They just became precarious.
What do you think of that, Stephen? They never left.
It's definitely possible. I mean, the difference in a megalodon teeth and a great white tooth is they look almost identical except for the size, and the meg has a chevron on its root. And but the caller is correct. I mean, we find them all over in rivers in Carolinas, in phosphate pits in Florida, in mountainsides in Maryland, and any place that was a shallow sea, you'll find megalodon teeth.
They didn't have bones, right?
That's right. They didn't have bones. They're
cartilage.
Cartilage, and cartilage dissolves in seawater, so the only thing we have is the tooth.
Amazing. Let's go next to John in Ontario, Canada. There he is. Hi, John.
Hello, George.
Hello there.
How are you?
Good.
No, I phoned you there a couple of weeks ago, maybe a bit longer, about a friend and I canoeing down a river.
Mm-hmm.
About 200 miles, even north, further north than I am from Toronto. I'm 150 miles from Toronto. But the place is called Balls Falls. It's weird, but anyway. It's beautiful, wide open, and it's a river. And it's deep, but I just happened to look up. There was no noise, but I just happened to, you know, be able to see because I'm in the back.
Uh-huh.
And three of these things started coming, so I just put my hand over his mouth. And I said, don't say nothing. Look up. He looked up, and, like, I thought he was going to jump out of the canoe, really.
What were they?
They were huge, but... From what I understand, they're not what you call thunderbirds. These things had leather wings.
Like pterodactyls, like prehistoric birds.
And they had long beaks, snouts, whatever. And they were, you know, they're all closed. And you could still see the teeth.
Did they look like they had just skin?
Yeah, they look...
That's a pterodactyl.
Like a bat wing.
And how big were they?
Oh, they were huge. They were, I'd say...
Like a Cessna, each one?
Yeah. In around that, like a small plane.
No noise?
No, nothing. They were just coasting over, and we were just, you know, we were scared to say, you know.
Oh, sure.
I didn't want any attention from these things.
Swoop down and pick you up, John.
Yeah, they were big. I mean, big.
Off you'd go, kicking and screaming.
Feet on them. my foot is exactly a foot, and I'd say it's 2.5 feet long, maybe 3.
Gosh, that's a great story. Not a sea creature, but
maybe it was a drone.
Well, I don't think they had them in those days. But now they would, I bet. Drones that look like prehistoric birds.
Yeah.
That's your next book. The pterodactyl that picks up people.
Small children in Australia.
There was one story in Alton where a bird was picking up a kid, and the mother had to come out with a broom and whack the thing on his talons, and he dropped him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've got some big predator birds out there that with big wingspans that pick up small dogs.
I think the unknown on this planet is just really, really exciting, isn't it?
It definitely for authors.
It is. Terry's in Minnesota, now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Terry, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Steve. I'm a fan of Meg. I bought it back in 97. I have the paperback. My question is, does Steve think because of the huge success of Jurassic World of last summer, because of the Megalodon was a main character in that movie, did that have a positive effect on his movie finally being greenlighted for this?
Interesting question. What do you think? Did that kind of spark things along, Steve?
Well, it wasn't a Megalodon. It was a Mosasaur.
What's the difference?
Mosasaur is a reptile. In the movie Jurassic World, it was the marine reptile that in the end grabbed the creature. But it was a wild scene. It was a scene sort of reminiscent of the last Meg book, Hell's Aquarium, almost directly taken from that. And they sort of did a shot across the bow of Meg because they fed it a great white shark, which is kind of a bizarre thing to feed a Mosasaur. But Meg was already being optioned at that point before Jurassic World came out, but it definitely turned up the heat on the project. There's no doubt about it. So that's a good observation.
When you write for these books, do you have to get into a certain state of mind?
Well, that's a good question. You know, my habit of writing is that the first thing I do when I sit down to write each day is that I edit the pages from the day before, and that sort of warms me up in the bullpen, and sort of sets me in the right stage. But writing an attack scene, you really got to put yourself into it in the position that the human is in and what they're feeling.
You see the difference technologically now when you were writing in the 90s as opposed to today? I mean, now you've got these wonderful little computers that do it all. In those days, you had what'd you have, a typewriter?
Yeah, it's a funny story because I had a word processor when I first started, and the aggravating thing about it was that it only would save 3 pages at a time.
Oh.
So whenever I edited, it would push the text off the page, and I'd lose stuff.
You'd lose it. Oh, frustrating.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, now it's unbelievable.
Well, the big thing is the internet. I mean, as far as an author is concerned, that's your best friend because you can look up the tiniest detail.
Yes, and include that. That's
yeah.
Right.
I mean, I've actually found restaurants in like faraway locations and called up the restaurant and asked them what the special was and put it in the scene.
Robert in Springfield, Missouri. Hi, Robert. You're on the air with us.
Well, hello, Mr. Norrie.
Hello.
I wanted to thank you. This is the first time I've been on Coast to Coast, and
well,
I really appreciate everything that you do.
Glad you got it.
I'm a huge fan of Coast to Coast AM. Steve Alton, I want to thank you for allowing the fans to be such an integral part of your novels. And my question is, I know you're going to be busy with the Meg movie, which is an awesome problem to have, but after like Unacknowledged and Meg 6, I'd like to know if you think you're going to start working on original novels or if you may go back and write sequels to some of your other novels you've already written.
Well, thank you, Robert, for your kind words. You know, I haven't thought that far ahead. It's like you say, I'm going to finish Unacknowledged and then get to Meg Generations, the last Meg book. And after that, I'm not sure. I mean, part of that is based upon what's hot at the time as far as my projects. If a sequel to one of my series, you know, if one of my other series has been optioned, then I might write something there. It's possible that I'll write the sequel to Goliath because that's being looked at as a possible movie as well. So, you know, we'll see. I'm not going to really be busy with the Meg movie because, you know, other than flying me out for a week, there's nothing I have to do with it.
You've done the work.
Yeah, I've done the work, and now they've kicked me off the project.
That's right. Exactly. As long as the check clears, Stephen, that matters.
Exactly what I say, George.
Thanks, Robert. Victor, truck driving in California. Go ahead, Victor.
Hi.
Hey.
Your thoughts, both of you, on some dark, deep government cave. The government playing around with human genes and animals.
Uh-huh.
And crossbreeding to, you know, the unbelievable weird things that you could put up with that we just can't seem to keep our hands off of. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know what? That's another good twist, Stephen. A government experiment that went awry.
Well, it sounds a little bit like Shark Man,
yeah.
Which was about a paralyzed teen who used shark stem cells to heal his spinal cord and ends up changing his genome into a predator. So
that's possible. When you make these chimeras, part human, part animal, anything's possible, isn't it?
Well, we don't know what the effects on the genes will be on the DNA. So yeah, you know when you start crossbreeding species, you never know what you're going to get.
No, you don't. Let's take a few more calls here. Then we are out of time with Stephen Alton, Mark in Abilene, Texas. Now, Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, how's it going, George?
Good, Mark. Thank you.
All right, I just want to start off just the background as to where I would have seen this. Retired military. I was in 27 years now. I was with the Navy at one point.
Thank you for serving.
Stuff with them. I appreciate that. It was my pleasure. But I was with the Navy, and I remember one time I'd always get, you know, my buddies from there, they tell stories about stuff they've seen on the water. Well, I'm sitting there one time, we're hanging out. We get some of the younger sailors come down. They say, hey, you guys got to get up here. So we run up, and I kid you not, George, I want to say it could be a whale, but it wasn't as wide as I'd think a whale would be, right?
Yeah.
It was more streamlined type. And this thing was moving.
And you could see it on top?
Yes, we are on, from the top of this. That's how it was enormous.
Was it underwater though?
It was underwater.
It was
underwater, and I mean, everyone's up there freaking out. Of course, you know, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, "Wow, I cannot believe this." It made me question myself. I said, "Man, am I drunk? Am I drunk as Cooter Brown?" But no, this thing, I kid you not, George, now, they've told me they've seen whales out there, but this thing was a skinnier than what a whale would look like, and it was just so quick and just streamlined through that water.
Could you tell what color it was?
I honestly, myself, could not. It was just dark. We seen the shadow, and I want to tell you, it was maybe there for 15 seconds when I got
up
before it just went back down.
Steven, could that have been a big shark?
You know, there are different types of whales that are very thin. A fin whale is very thin, and so it's possible it could have been a whale.
More and more creatures out there, Stephen. More and more creatures. Let's take a few more calls. Felix is in Atlantic City, New Jersey. First-time caller with us. Hi, Felix.
Hello. How you doing, George?
Good.
First-time caller. And listen, talking about the Jersey Devil. The Jersey Devil was here one time. I was in fourth grade, and they showed a film about the Jersey Devil here in Atlanta County, and they showed the film and they showed the Jersey Devil because it was people going in those back streets and stuff, and it was like, how they bring the Jersey Devil here, and also, do they come from another planet or something, or like these type of creatures, you know, how do they come? Just like the My parents come from Puerto Rico also, and the chupacabra.
Oh yeah.
And the chupacabra sucking up all these goats and cows and stuff. I'm asking Steve, do they come from another planet or something like that?
What do you think about that, Steve? The other planet theory.
Well, I'm not that familiar with the Jersey Devil, so I'm sort of at a loss here. But you know, we're always hearing things that creatures from other planets and things like that. I mean, if we believe in extraterrestrials, and I do.
Who knows? Maybe, huh?
Yeah.
Can't rule it out. I think the chupacabras are earthbound, but you never know. The Jersey Devil, strange creatures, different myths. Same with Mothman. Things are happening. Strange things are happening. Some people thought Mothman might have been a huge owl. There are big owls that look almost like humans when they stand up.
That would make sense.
You know, you ever look at an owl? I mean, it looks like a little human.
And the way their heads can turn around, it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, and the eyes are looking at you and things like that. It really is something else. I don't think we're going to have time for any more calls, Stephen. Keep in touch with us. Just always let us know what you're working on, and definitely when you get close to movie premiere time, let us know, would you?
Absolutely, and I'm really looking forward to Night Talk coming out at the end of July, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
Thank you. And spell out your website one more time.
www.stevealten.com.
You got it. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, George.
Up next on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to be talking about crop formations with Patty Greer. What is going on the planet? Where are they coming from? Who's doing it? Are they communicating with us? Is the planet doing it? Is the Gaia theory that the planet is alive? Is it trying to communicate with us? Extraterrestrials? Oh, yeah, of course there's some fraud and hoax, the crop formations tossed in there. But all you need is one really authentic one. And she has visited more than 100 crop circles. So we'll be talking with Patty about that next on Coast to Coast AM.